Okay, we welcome to WICN alto saxophonist Charles McPherson on the occasion of his 28th album as a leader, Jazz Dance Suites. Charles's musical career dates back over 60 years with many, many highlights, and we want to touch on some of them. But let's make sure we focus first on Jazz Dance Suites. It's a very special project that involves a major dance company and a member of your family.
That's right.
And so tell us a bit about it.
Well, okay, my daughter Camille is a dancer, one of the soloists with the San Diego Ballet here in San Diego. And I've been involved with that ballet company for about 5 years now. Mm-hmm. She has been dancing with them maybe like 9 years or so. And I became involved maybe 4 or 5 years ago, I guess, and as resident composer with the company. And in that time, I have this CD represents about 5 years of me being involved with them and performances that we've done. So there are basically three suites on the CD representing those years. And there's another composition called Reflection on an Election that represents actually another suite called Reflection on an Election, Turmoil and Hope. However, we just use the one composition, Reflection on an Election, and it's sandwiched between the two suites. Song of Songs, and then Reflection, and then Sweet Synergy. And that's about it. So it represents about 5 years of performances and me being involved with the company as a resident composer. So we went in the Van Gelder Studios and recorded it. And great musicians on there, if I may mention them.
Please.
We have Jeb Patton, pianist. Another pianist, Randy Porter, was on there, who also helped A&R and master, do some mastering for the date. Yotam Silberstein, Israeli guitarist that lives in New York now. The female vocalist was Lorraine Teresa, very important part of the date. David Wong, bassist, Billy Drummond on drums. And of course, Terrell Stafford on trumpet, and myself on an alto. I think I named it all the people. And
right. And much of the inspiration for it seems to lie in your daughter and that interaction that you had with them, and be able to create art with her. Seems like it's a very special thing.
Yeah, very special. And you know, when we performed all of these compositions in suites, we were live on stage. We were right there with the dancers. And that's interesting. We're able to be there in real time and be performing the music that they're dancing and moving to. And it's especially nice to be there and see my daughter dance and every now and then look up and take a glance at her and the rest of the dancers. So it's a very beautiful experience, you know.
Yeah, I have to tell you, I read the liner notes, which are outstanding to this project, but she has an essay at the end. And I've read a lot of liner notes over the years. That was the first time I've come to tears. It was so beautiful what she had to say about her, you know, being able to perform with you.
Yes. Well, thank you. I'll tell her that. She will be she would be moved by that. But yes, I know what you mean, and I was moved as well, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's really a beautiful feeling for a parent to enjoy the feeling of their children, and in this case, Camille, to love you in that manner, not only as a parent, but also as a fellow artist as well. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of her, you know, with her things that she had to say, spoke to many things, you know, the art of it, the music, the dance, her relationship with me, and as a father, as a artist as well. And all of those things were said and expressed, and in a beautiful way. Not only what was being said by her, which was beautiful in itself, but how she crafted and used, you know, the language to craft. I mean, just her craft in writing was really, really, really great, you know, as well as, you know, really very nice things being said.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that was special for sure.
Yeah, well, the music is very special on its own. And one thing that I really impressed with is, even though it was a suite of connected pieces, they all hold together as,
Thank you. You
know, individual tracks.
Okay.
And,
well, that's very nice, a very nice compliment. And I'm glad that it came off that way.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, this is what you want. You want it to hold together.
Mm-hmm.
You want the continuity of emotions, thoughts, everything to do with the aesthetic part of it, and of course the crafting of it, all that, and for it to be this flow of all of it, and to be to stand in, you know, each composition and performance to stand on its own as well as being connected to the whole. So all the component parts are working, and the whole is working too, you know. So that's good. I was hoping that this could happen that way.
Mm-hmm. Well, as looking at it as a program host, as a DJ, you know, you're looking at playing one track at a time, but
But, you know, as a DJ, I'm sure you also think of, even though you're doing one track at a time, you got a certain amount of time to do your thing, but you are probably aware of the collective emotional vibe,
mm-hmm,
of your whole, whatever it is, however long you are on air. There is this feeling of, okay, at the end of the day, what was, if you want to put it into words, what is the collective emotionality that that my whole afternoon was?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and yes, it can be eclectic and can be, you know, dimension and have different colors and temples and all that, but what was the collective gist of this your afternoon? And that's the way we have to do it as musicians, our artists. We have to think of each individual, you know, into little component parts, but also the whole, the gestalt, the whole of it as well, you know. And then, yeah, so it's a lot of things being satisfied, hopefully.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And I think before we go any further, we would like to remind people or tell people of how to get a hold of Jazz Dance Suites.
Okay. All right, well, now you can get it by way of my website, and you can buy it by that way.
Right, which is charlesmcpherson.com.
Yes.
Right, and there's a link on the homepage to it, I know.
Right, so certainly there.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess there are other ways as well.
You can also get it on Bandcamp or through iTunes if you don't want the physical product. But right. Yeah, well, thank you very much.
And also with mm-hmm. some of them, if it's requested, there's photos as well,
mm-hmm.
Or a photo, let's say, that I can sign, of course, you know.
Okay, but it's a great thing. Jazz Dance Suites from Charles McPherson, and it's on your own label, correct?
Yes, mm-hmm. Jazz Mac Music. Mm-hmm. And it's self-produced. We did it. We took the step. It's an adventurous step indeed, but we did, and we chose the Van Gelder Studios, and I must say I thought they got a great sound on this CD, and mm-hmm. I'm very happy with the sax, the alto sound that they were able to get. So that was and that's the legendary Van Gelder Studios, and so that was fun doing it there. And I through the years I've been there a few times.
Yes,
with my own configurations. Also, I think with Mingus, in the past, and Barry Harris, and a lot of great musicians. So there's a history,
Mm-hmm. So meaningful thing to be able to do at this point in your life.
Yes.
Back there. And I guess they've preserved the Van Gelder Studio now as a historic building.
Oh, yeah. Well, as it should be, because it's just a gorgeous sound.
Mm-hmm.
The studio itself, the natural organic sound is just really beautiful. It's like being in a great giant speaker. The wood, everything is resonating, the physicalities of the room, the size of it, everything about it and it's probably in the walls. Just the great sounds and that have happened in that place,
Right. And I mentioned that an alto saxophonist who's a very good friend of ours at WICN and of me personally, Greg Abate, do you know him?
Oh, yeah, Greg. I don't know him well, but of course.
Yeah, he's from around here. And he, in September, recorded an album in Van Gelder, his first time in there, with Kenny Barron.
Yeah, I heard about that. Tell mm-hmm. him congratulations.
Well, thank you. I certainly will. Yeah. And let's see. One of the things that you are renowned for is your ability to evoke the real spirit and the sound of Charlie Parker. And for example, Clint Eastwood called on you to play the instrumental tracks for his biopic. And I know Winton has called on you to, like for the Bird with Strings mm-hmm. concert that he did. And were you with him again recently with the Jazz at Lincoln Center Orchestra?
Yeah, a couple of years ago, we played, it was kind of a tribute, an 80th birthday tribute at Lincoln Center, before all this pandemic situation. Also, it was a tribute for McCoy Tyner as well. And so they played, the Lincoln Center Orchestra played my original compositions. I performed on some of them, and that was last year, I think, last April or something, last spring.
Mm-hmm.
I got to check with that. My concept of time is not what it used to be, But, so that was the last time I was involved with them. But I've done many things with them through the years,
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, the Clint Eastwood project was interesting. That happened by way of Lenny Niehaus, a wonderful alto player that was Clint Eastwood's musical director for years. And, he played with, I think, Stan Kenton.
Yes.
A really wonderful alto player himself.
And a wonderful arranger.
Yeah, all of that. Wonderful musician. And so I got involved probably because of him. And so that's how that happened. and I was used when they didn't have the, you know, recorded documentation of Bird, or if there were contractual nuances or you know, problems or anything like that. And there were scenes where that, of course, Bird wasn't, there's no documentation of that. Like the wedding, there's a wedding, Jewish wedding scene where Charlie Parker and Red Rodney play up in the mountains in New York. And there's no documentation of that, of course. So I was used for incidental scenes like that. And Charlie Parker, you know, my, you know, I first heard Bird when I was about 14 years old. And he immediately resonated with me. Even though I'm just a kid, and I don't know much about harmony or theory or any of that at that time. But I could hear Bird's linear logic. You know, he played many notes and he played very long musical sentences. But the linear logic with all those notes was spot on, and also these long, beautiful lines and musical sentences were very melodic and they were seamlessly connected. And I could hear that as a kid. This was what was different to me about Charlie Parker. And I knew that this way of thinking about getting to the notes with this kind of logic was the thing to do. And what you must do, not to copy the person, which is Bird, is have your own notes. But the linear logic and melodicism is definitely the way to go. And I've always sort of understood that. And and the rhythm, I must say, also. The rhythmic, the total rhythmic freedom, the melodicism, and the logic, all great things that Bird had. And this I was able to understand very early on. And that this ideal is to be, you must look to this person and learn this, not the notes necessarily, but have that kind of logic and flow of musical ideas that connect seamlessly.
It's and, a beautiful,
I'm sorry. No, this is what everybody, I mean, I'm not the only one that heard that and maybe tried to learn that lesson. I mean, everybody since Charlie Parker has known that this is it. And you do try to forge your own style, but this is a Renaissance musician. You know, it happens every few hundred years. Bird is like, and there he is. He'll always be. There's no time, you know, because when you get to that level of wonderfulness, that's no longer trapped. I mean, time and linear time and space has nothing to do with that. You know, because the level is so high that it's beyond you, that has nothing to do with it anymore. So Bach is still wonderful. I don't care if it's 100 years later, and it's just nothing you can do about it. It is what it is. And Bird is one of those. It is what it is, and it's just the level is that marvelous. And so all I did was what everybody tried to do. I mean, that's what John Coltrane did. Check the language of Charlie Parker, learn what you can from that, and develop your own whatever. That's what Sonny Rollins has done. This is what Chet Baker has done. This is what Miles has done. This is what Clifford Brown has done. This is what everybody has tried to do, you know, is to have that kind of excellency without copying the person, and still have that kind of integrity and craftsmanship and artistry. So all I've done is, you know, I'm young alto, I'm young at the time, you know, is try to do what everybody else tried to do.
Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful statement, perceptive and profound.
Thank you.
Thank you for that. So looking at the jazz scene today, what do you see going on for the future?
Well, I think it will always be. I have confidence that it will always be. I mean, there will always be young people any place on the planet or Earth that will hear this music and will be compelled to understand it, try to play it, learn whatever they can, and to actually do it, to take up the challenge and to learn and do. So I think it will always be. However, I don't have any confidence that it will ever be a mass media music. I think it will always be like European Western classical music. It will always be. I think jazz will always be, but I don't think it will ever be the popular mass media music, because it doesn't involve the trappings. Don't involve the things that seem to be necessary for music to be accepted by the masses. There are certain things that have to be part of the music in order for that to happen. And jazz really, for the most part, does not involve itself with those, with the trappings, the come-ons that seem to be necessary for it to have mass appeal. You know, it's based on just music itself, not the trappings of music. It's not really show. It's not really show business as such. You know, they're not, when you go hear a jazz singer or jazz musician, there's, you know, smoke coming or somebody coming down from the ceiling on a rope, you know, or green smoke or firecrackers in the back. I mean, it has nothing to do with the music. You accept it or don't accept it on its own merits. And the marketing and the all of the, you know, extra added attractions to make it more visual or more this or sexuality or all of these things that are component parts of what make a mass appeal happen in terms of music, is not really involved with classical music, if I might use that term, or jazz music for the most part. So, no, I don't think it will ever be a mass media music for those reasons.
Mm-hmm. Now, but maybe, it will always be.
Yeah, so, but I think it will always
and
be.
And we will.
So, I mean, yes.
And very inspiring to for us to hear as a small independent radio station that's been playing this music for over 20 years now as our main format.
Yeah.
Similar to KSDS out your way.
Yeah. And it's very, I mean, people like me are very appreciative of people like you who involve yourselves, you know, with your own time and energy and your own personal creativity and invested in an art form and a music that really it just kind of stands on its own. And it's not like this mass appeal, and people like you still care enough to invest time and energy on playing the music or promoting it or talking about it or just involved in it on any level. So that's commendable as far as I'm concerned.
Well, we
and
keep
if it
doing
weren't
it.
For that, people like me, you know, wouldn't, you know, all of that is helping us to actually be as well, to perform, you know.
You know, absolutely.
Because it's hard as an artist to do everything, you know. I want to create and write music and play music. It's hard to wear a lot of different hats, you know, to be a marketing person, to be a publicist, to to do all these things, to blow your own horn, to get your product out there. These things are, it takes a certain amount of artistry to do that kind of stuff. And I want to play the horn and write the music, you know.
And we hope the system can keep going the way it is. Thank you. I just want to ask you one other question, just kind of out of curiosity. We're up here in the Worcester's about 50 miles west of Boston. Yeah,
Jackie Barr, great pianist.
He
played with Mingus for a while. We played together with Mingus for a few years.
I imagine that must have had some interesting moments.
Oh, it's some seriously interesting moments.
Mm-hmm. But do you have any recollections, stories about being around Boston?
Well, I remember playing there with Mingus a few times. There was a place called Lenny's on the Turnpike.
Of blessed memory, yes.
Yeah, in Peabody or Peabody, mm-hmm, or whatever they called it. I played there more recently. When I say more recently, I mean 25 years ago. I've been there quite a bit through the years. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm trying to remember now. There are certain clubs. I remember being there with Mingus and Jackie, not Jackie Barr, but Mingus, Lonnie Hillier, a trumpet player, and tenor player Bobby Jones. There was some club we worked.
Maybe the Jazz Workshop.
That's what it was. Okay. Thanks, yeah. I have to,
get
my memory stirred up, you know.
Yeah. But Detroit seems to be the place. You moved there when you were about 10 years old, and that's really where you got your musical formation. And there was pretty incredible jazz scene.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. I moved there in 1948.
Okay.
I was about nine or so. And I had really, my mom had, on my mother's side, she had brothers and sisters that lived there, and that she moved to Detroit. And I just happened to live on a street called Tyerman. It's on the west side of Detroit. And on that street was a great local jazz club called the Bluebird. Also on that street was a trumpet player my age named Lonnie Hillier. And we both ended up working with Mingus. You know, we went from Detroit to New York in 1959, I think. And started working with Mingus. But that was great. Detroit at that time was just fertile with a lot of clubs and wonderful musicians. You know, and this club I was telling you about, the Bluebird on my street, Tyerman, a couple blocks down, I could walk in 5 minutes there. And the house band at that time, and I'm 14 years old when I discover this club, 14 or 15. The house man was Elvin Jones on drums. Barry Harris was the house pianist. Pepper Adams was the house baritone sax player. Thad Jones was the trumpet player. People like Billy Mitchell, great tenor player, worked there all the time. Bass player was a guy named Beans Richardson, wonderful bassist. Paul Chambers, maybe sometimes. People like Miles Davis lived in Detroit during this period for a couple years. He worked at the Bluebird every night, as a guest artist. People like Wardell Grace, Sonny Stitt. These people all, were there in Detroit. And this is my musical... this was happening when I was, starting out playing jazz music.
And you got an education that money can't buy there, and learned your lessons well.
Yeah,
really well.
We learned how to play in those days. Jazz wasn't in the schools. They weren't really in the colleges. There were no jazz programs. So there were no books on you know, Charlie Parker books or John Coltrane books. We had to learn from records. We had to slow records down in those days that were like the 12-inch LPs. We had to slow them down to try to understand all those notes and everything that was going on. We had to learn from older players, you know, so that's the way it was done. The older players would show the younger players how to play by asking questions, watching them play, them showing us things. This is the way this kind of knowledge was handed down. We served an apprenticeship. Once you get to a certain level, then you would work with somebody older that plays better than you. You work with those people for a few years or as long as you can. You develop, and then eventually the plan was to go to New York and throw your hat in the ring. And that's what we did. So that's the way it was done in those days, because New York was the Mecca. It was the networking place. All the record companies were there. And musicians from all over the United States would do exactly that, stay in their hometowns, learn everything they could, and then eventually go to New York. And so New York would be a conglomeration of musicians from all over the country. And this is from that, then there's the New York experience. All the ideas and all of the things that you learn and glean from other musicians, from other places, and this is what you learn in New York. And then this is how it was done. So now it's a little bit different. It's not the same anymore. I don't know if young players, it's a different world for them.
Almost the opposite, where you're in school all the time and you're not getting the gigging experience.
Now it's taught in schools. There are jazz programs in colleges all over, you know, and high school, you know, there are jazz bands in high school, you know, so academic, there's more going on. There's more information. There's a lot of information that that is there and available, you know. But certain things are different, like the apprenticeship. That's a little different. I don't know if a young player quite often actually has if this happens for them. It does, I'm sure, to some extent, but not like it did for us. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You really did learn how to play from older players. And there's a big lesson in that. You know, and then you go and have your own band or whatever you're going to do, but you have spent the time, and you know, that's a great thing. Then that might be one of the things that might be missing now for a lot of young players.
Yeah, you know, and
that it would be good for them to have that.
And I notice you've got your strap on.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Because I practice my whole day. I do things I need to do. I walk the dogs, you go to the bank. You do things that you need to do. But as much as I can, I do practice and stay in shape. And especially now with the pandemic going on. I mean, you're in the house more often and longer than you know. And for me, I just take the time and practice, and I enjoy doing that.
Well, this has been fantastic, Charles.
Thank you.
Created such a legacy for us to enjoy, and still creating wonderful music with Jazz Dance Suites, and hopefully there'll be more.
Well, I hope so. It will. Well, thank you very much.
Well, you're so welcome, and hope this will this interview comes out, and I'll let you know when it's going to run on the air.
Okay,
that's and good. We're gonna edit it for play in the afternoon, but I'm sure we'll have a podcast or maybe in a night show we'll run the whole thing, because it's really okay. Every moment's been fascinating. And thank you so much.
All right, well, thank you, and so do whatever, just send us or keep us in the loop. Mm-hmm. It's good.
Okay, well, great. Thanks so much, Charles McPherson.
Thank you.
Joining us here on 90.5 WICN. Have a good day. Stay healthy.
Okay, you too as well. Thank you very much.
Bye.
See you.